Well, hello, everybody. This is Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 74. It has been a little while since I've been able to create these programs, probably as much as 4 months, unfortunately. But they will be put together in order, and so you should be able to have the book and what I say upon it with continuity. We are in the middle of the Sagittarius chapter, and we went a little farther, but I'm going to start back here on page 186, and what we will see here is that we're dealing with the constellation Sagittarius, but he says he involves the other constellations as well. He says, take, for example, the, let's see. Okay. He says, take for example the constellation which we are now considering, that is Sagittarius, and remember that the same basic streams of energy will have to be noted in connection with every other sign in which a man may take incarnation. So the system that he sets up here in Sagittarius is something that we can do for every one of the signs. If we learn how to do it in Sagittarius, we can apply the same principles to every other sign, and I can see in the future that there may well be someone who would like to do this for each of the signs of the zodiac. I'm not sure that we can do this in reading through the book. But anyway, he says here, we shall find that we have to consider, and then he goes on, the sun sign, okay, in connection with conditions, circumstances. We shall have to consider the rising sign, and the ascendant can be one of the other 11 signs or the same sign. We shall have to consider the mutable cross in this particular case. We shall have to consider the orthodox planets, then the esoteric planets, and then the planetary ruler of a hierarchy. Now, all of this we did in Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 73, but I'm just reviewing what we've been through here. A study of the above will reveal most interesting relationships and prove my point anent the multiplicity of energies to which the wonderful mechanism of man can respond, and to which, as evolution proceeds, he can become increasingly sensitive. I may have sometimes mentioned that Master DK did some astrological analysis of the nations in The Destiny of the Nations, that particular book. And I think we will find that some of those analyses can be applied directly to the individual if the same method is used. And we will see that a nation is responsive to, indeed, a multiplicity of energies. And there we have a very practical method of demonstrating that this is the case. So I suggest that we study A Destiny of the Nations. Perhaps we'll be able to do that after we complete this book, some of the astrological analyses found therein. So DK wants to prove his point concerning anent the multiplicity of energies to which the wonderful mechanism of man can respond. I think this is one of the key factors we find that we live our lives in a somewhat normal way, not realizing how these aggregations of energies are constantly changing, coming in and out, changing their relationships with each other, and causing subtle changes or inclining towards subtle changes in our thought, our feelings, and our general physical behavior. So, we go on. I cannot here enter into a detailed analysis of the many energies which pour through the disciple as he arrives at the final stages upon the mutable cross. This is before he enters the Hall of Wisdom, before he has taken the first initiation, before he is has completely opened the fifth petal of the egoic lotus, that is, while he is a probationary disciple and not yet a true disciple who has taken the first degree and is moving towards accepted discipleship somewhere between the first and second degree. So he cannot enter into here the detailed analysis of the many energies which stand at this important point of transition between the mutable cross, the cross of many changes, the cross of the personality and of the development of the personality vehicles, and then the fixed cross, the cross in which a soul consciousness is developed and the personality made into an instrument of the soul. So, until he arrives at the final stages upon the mutable cross and in Sagittarius achieves the determination, now that's a word that's related to fixed determination of the members of the new group of world servers and of those who find themselves in Taurus. We know the close relationship between Taurus and Sagittarius. We are told in a way that Taurus rushes blindly until Sagittarius directs. At the same time, we realize that Sagittarius is directing itself towards the type of illumination which Taurus represents. So we cannot say that one sign is more advanced than another, at least in this particular context. There may be ways in which these 12 zodiacal lords are not completely even in their spiritual development, but that is somewhat beyond us to be able to appraise. We know that there is uneven development between the planetary lords, between the lords of the planetary schemes, and we have some idea of the different categories when we deal with non-sacred planets, sacred planets, and those sacred planets which are synthesizing planets as well. So those three categories we do understand as differentiating between the spiritual development of the planetary lords, but well, while something of the same may exist with the lords of the constellations, we are not given to understand what that stratification may be, how the different levels of development may manifest among those 12. I suppose it has a lot to do with how the 12 major petals in the head center of the one about whom naught may be said are unfolded. You know, each of us has a 12 petaled lotus in the center of our head center, the 12 most important or major petals within our head center, but I do not think we should think of them all as equally unfolded. This probably occurs more towards mastership and within a Maya Virupa, this somewhat equal unfoldment, but then we cannot tell if it is so even then. Anyway, we are all very, very different, even though we display structural similarities. So, as he arrives at the final stages upon the mutable cross, and in Sagittarius achieves the determination to direct his steps into another way of life, and with ardor firm to mount another cross. These are marvelous. This is a marvelous statement concerning the qualities of Sagittarius. That other way of life is the way of the reversed wheel. It has been reversing even in the latter stages of the mutable cross, but the reversal will be more pronounced as we step upon the fixed cross and probably confirmed somewhere between the second and third initiation. And with ardor firm. Now, Sagittarius is one of the fire signs and a keen sign of aspiration, as we can tell by two of its rulers, Jupiter and Mars, the hierarchical ruler, the planet of keen aspiration. The upward direction of that aspiration comes with Jupiter, and it is not a light or an aspiration which burns now and then, which is fleeting and flickering and inconstant and inconsistent. Rather, it is a type of fire or ardor which burns consistently and is therefore firm. So in Sagittarius, he achieves the determination to direct his steps into another way of life and with ardor firm to mount another cross. As the old commentary puts it, I can only point out that the following ray forces pour into the man, onto and into, through the medium of the following planets. And of course, now we are at that point. This was the end of a 3-hour program for Esoteric Astrology, Adventure number 73. Now we go on. So what are these planets and their forces that are pouring onto the man? Well, the exoteric are Mercury, the fourth ray, and this gives us harmony through conflict, and Jupiter, the second ray, love, wisdom. Now, what's happening here is we're taking the mutable cross and we're looking at the two rulers of the mutable cross. We are aware that Gemini exoterically is ruled by Mercury. That's the first sign on the mutable cross. Virgo is ruled by Mercury. So exoterically, through these two constellations or signs, come the fourth ray of harmony through conflict, which is so well displayed by struggling humanity through the majority of its evolutionary process over millions of years. To be a human being is to struggle between higher possibilities and residual possibilities which come from the lower three kingdoms, especially, I suppose, the animal kingdom towards which we are drawn before we emerge. Then there comes Sagittarius itself, and Pisces, both of them ruled by Jupiter on the second ray. So this has to do with the development of our desire nature and our love nature as we move out on the mutable cross towards that which appeals to us. So we have here these energies exoterically. And then we have the esoteric energies. We have, let's go back to Gemini now. Gemini, we know, is esoterically ruled by magnetic, illuminative Venus, one of the great planets of love, wisdom, in this case conveying, I believe, in its soul nature, the fifth ray of concrete science, or the ray of mind, perhaps more than the ray of creative intelligence, which is the third. Although Venus has sometimes been, you know, connected with monastic permanent atoms, and therefore with the third ray. Anyway, Venus, fifth ray, concrete science or mind. Then we move to Virgo, and on this mutable cross, the moon is the esoteric ruler of Virgo, conveying the fourth ray of harmony through conflict, especially as it begins to resolve into a greater harmony under the impulse or influence of the soul, but this moon will be veiling a first-ray planet Vulcan in the case of Virgo, and also a primarily sixth-ray planet Neptune in the case of Virgo as well. So the first and sixth rays are veiled by this fourth-ray moon. Then we move on to Sagittarius, which esoterically is ruled by the Earth, and we have here the glorification of the path, and we have Earth aspiring, and eventually, as has sometimes been popularly thought, Earth ascending towards its greater soul possibilities, the animal in Earth, the animal Earth being redirected towards the higher second-ray soul expression. And that fits very well, of course, because the soul ray of the Earth is the second ray, and the Earth esoterically helps the third ray of the Earth personality to move towards its second ray. All right, then we move on to Pluto, which is the first ray esoteric ruler of Pisces. So we have the rays coming in upon the Sagittarian subject, or I suppose upon any mutable cross subject, if your sun sign, let us say, is on the mutable cross. We have the fifth ray, the fourth ray, the third ray, and the first ray. And we remember that exoterically, we have this fourth ray and the second ray, so the fourth ray is doubled. What is left out here? Well, the sixth ray is technically left out, and the seventh ray is technically left out, but they are, the seventh ray is out, in fact, but the sixth ray comes through Neptune, which the moon veils. Okay. Now, the hierarchical ruler here is Mars, and this is the sixth ray of devotion, and I like how we see a higher form of the expression of Mars here. War to the death of the personality or form. So we know that by the time the third initiation is reached, the ancient authority of the personality has been overcome, and we are in a position where the personality becomes strictly a servant of the soul. All right. So the Sagittarian subject is subjected to all of these ray energies, and now we see that Mars has come in a more declarative way through the hierarchical ruler. Now, we can wonder why the other hierarchical rulers on the mutable cross are not mentioned. But we are perhaps at a somewhat lower stage of evolution where not all of them are relevant. In which case, of course, we would have the Earth for Gemini, we would have, and that is already mentioned, we would have Jupiter for Virgo, and that is already mentioned in the Piscean context and Sagittarian context. We would have Mars, and here we have it, and then we would have Pluto, which is already mentioned. So it's this multiplicity of energies to which we respond, which has to be taken into consideration. The multiplicity of energies. Okay. Now let us move on. An analysis of this will show that the forces of conflict are powerful in this sign, primarily in the life of the disciple. Now, the forces of conflict will be, I suppose, particularly the fourth ray. And the fourth ray did come in exoterically, and it's also coming in esoterically as well. So there is a reinforcement of the fourth ray, and let us also realize that not only through the planetary expression does this fourth ray arrive, but the fourth ray is one of the constellationally transmitted rays. through Sagittarius. There is the fourth ray, the fifth ray, and the sixth ray, which is most powerful through Sagittarius. So we have a real reinforcement of the fourth ray. Although the Sagittarian disciple achieves one-pointedness, it is not without a previous conflict, and the resolution of that conflict in the direction of purpose. That is, I suppose, once the necessary steadfastness of the fourth ray has been achieved. Okay. Now let us go on. Primarily in the life of the disciple. Okay, harmony through conflict is ceaselessly active and appears in both the orthodox and esoteric assignments. Now, I suppose what we would do if we did this for the other signs is we would see what types of rays are reinforced esoterically, exoterically, and even hierarchically. And there's plenty of conflict involved with the sixth ray as well. Which comes in hierarchically and which comes in through the veiled Neptune. So, you know, the sixth ray is the ray of devotion, but whenever you are deeply devoted to something, there are always obstacles, and with them you have to contend. The destructive power of the first ray, focused in Pluto, brings change, darkness, and death. I suppose there's no greater change in the life of man than the drama of death, the result of death. So always something is destroyed under the first ray, and something new begins. So these are different ingredients in the life of the Sagittarian disciple, not coming strictly through his sign alone, no, but coming from the cross itself. And notice that the multiplicity of energies increases for the disciple, because we would not be responding to the esoteric rulers and the rays they convey if we were simply the man upon the ordinary wheel. It would be mostly second ray and fourth ray to which we were responding, and the fifth ray and the reinforcement of the fourth ray and the third ray and the first ray, they would not be with us if we were simply the ordinary man upon the ordinary wheel. Okay. So the destructive power of the first ray, focused in Pluto, brings change, darkness. Pluto is lord of darkness and death. And the darkness, of course, is that point which comes before revelation is possible. We all have heard of the dark night of the soul, when it seems that no light shines in the, at least no spiritual light shines in the consciousness of the individual. And there is a moment of great uncertainty and oppression before the light breaks forth. To this intensity and potency of Pluto must be added the forceful and dynamic energy of the planet Mars. So even though we're dealing, you know, hierarchically here, we don't necessarily have to be an initiate in order for this Martian energy to be affecting us. There's so much in Sagittarius, at least in the symbolism of it, which is rather warlike. We have the falling falcon as an associated constellation. We have the altar, Ara, the altar, perhaps in the middle decanate, ruled by Mars. You see, a Sagittarian individual will have, in the decanate rulers, Mars will be a decanate ruler, and therefore all Sagittarian individuals will be affected, as are all the fire signs, by the planets Jupiter, Mars, and the Sun, although in varying order. So Mars is involved in the Sagittarian expression, and Sagittarius, in a way, is a great warlord, riding on a horse and bringing through the bow and arrow and other projectiles, death and destruction. So it is, in many ways, a military sign, and it's associated with the horse as an animal who is finding one of his avenues of expression in war. Okay, so we have Pluto and Mars. These are energies which rule the subdiaphragmatic chakras, and together they produce the potential for violence is very strong when Pluto and Mars are found together. So this brings the entire human family, because it's a fourth ray family, under the as well as the individual, under the law of strife. Notice how he calls it a law, meaning that it's quite inescapable. We are not in a position to have peace from the very beginning. We have to fight for a more lasting peace, which is in line with shambolic purpose. So this brings the entire human family, as well as the individual, under the law of strife, based this time upon sixth ray devotion to an ideal, high or low. So, as I said, when there is a keen dedication, a keen devotion, a keen ideal, the obstacles to the achievement of that ideal will show themselves, and they have to be contended with. And in the case of the sixth ray, mostly overcome. The fourth ray is the ray that makes accommodation with the apparent obstacles, but in the mind of the sixth ray individual, the idea of overcoming is paramount. So all of these play upon the individual born in the sign of Sagittarius. Notice we're not talking about being born under the sign of Sagittarius, because to be born under a sign is to be born with the rising sign as Sagittarius. In other words, under Sagittarius is Sagittarius rising. Okay, as well as upon the fourth creative hierarchy as a whole. So these signs, this particular sign, because it has so much of the fourth ray, will affect the entire human creative hierarchy. Well, really, I think all the signs affect the entire creative hierarchy of humanity, but some of them more than others, and I suppose especially those which have much of the fourth ray in it, such as Scorpio and Taurus and, of course, Sagittarius. And as we know, the entire human creative hierarchy is actually, shall we say, ruled by the sign Scorpio. Okay, this, you can see for yourself, brings in a terrific situation, and the forces playing upon the disciple are of a momentous nature, provided that the mechanism of awareness is adequate to respond, because it's certainly possible for us to have many forces playing upon us and be unable to detect what they are or respond to them wisely. Often we are driven by these forces rather than responding to them intelligently. And this is one of the great purposes of esoteric astrology, so that we can determine which are the forces which are actually playing upon us at any particular time, and what is the best way, given the context of our life purpose overall, to respond to these forces. These forces in all the signs are ever present, but responsiveness and sensitivity to their impact is dependent upon the nature of the response apparatus. Ponder upon this thought, for it is this sensitivity which marks the difference between the disciple and the average man. Now, that's such an important idea. The disciple and later the initiate, the disciple is increasingly sensitive, the initiate even more so. So things which the consciousness and general energy condition of the average man simply deflects, things of which that such an individual is unaware, are registered by the disciple and even more so by the initiate, and that, of course, is a challenge to respond to them in the proper way. This is, of course, not easy to do, and it takes a long cultivation, but at least through esoteric astrology, we are becoming increasingly aware of what those forces may be and what may be the proper way to respond. These planetary influences are distinctive of the suns of mind of Venusian origin. Well, the human being is a son of mind, but even more so, the solar angel is a son of mind. Now, Venusian origin. Well, we have to be careful when we see such a statement, because we're told that not only does the human being as we know it at the present time not come from Venus, particularly, there are some who do, of course, but not necessarily in general, but the solar angels themselves are not necessarily coming from the planet Venus, although they may pass through the planet Venus. And probably there are solar angels of a very high nature which are resident on Venus at this time. But the solar angels of which we speak when we talk about those who supervise the human being, as we know the human being now, have come from Sirius, where they have been trained as solar angels. They've passed through the heart of the sun and sometimes through the central spiritual sun. They have perhaps passed through Venus or under Venusian influence. They've come into our particular planet. They've focused in the Venus chain of our Earth planetary scheme and on the Venus globe. They have passed also to our Earth chain and to the Venus globe of our Earth chain, and eventually to the Earth globe, the fourth globe of our Earth chain. And there may have been adjustments as well, passing from the Venus globe to the of the Earth of the Venus chain to the Earth globe, or to the fourth globe of the Venus chain. Anyway, there's a complex passage all the way from Sirius down to the point where the solar angel has engaged with what we call now the human being. So they are sons of mind, and also we are sons of mind, but we are lesser sons of mind than they, and under their influence we move, many of us, towards becoming greater sons of mind or solar angels, eventually to take the fourth path towards Sirius and to be trained there as solar angels for future forms of service, probably in the coming solar system, the third major solar system and the sixth solar system through which our solar logos is passed. Okay, so these planetary influences that we have discussed, probably planetary influences which have been instrumental in converting the animal man into the human being, the third kingdom into the fourth, are characteristic of the lords of sacrifice and will, functioning in time and space through the fourth grade of hierarchy. So, in fact, he's talking very much about us. Although the solar angels used to be human beings in perhaps the previous solar system, he's talking about the members of the fourth grade of hierarchy at this time, and this is the human creative hierarchy. We are, he's telling us, lords of sacrifice and will, and the planetary influences of Mercury and Jupiter and Venus and the Moon and the Earth and Pluto and so forth and Mars are all characteristic of our nature. We express these planetary potencies in a focused way as human beings. Now, he goes on to elaborate. The form life, the triple form life that we have, is ruled by the moon veiling a hidden planet. Now, the hidden planet can be considered to be Vulcan, Although, when we read Virgo, we will see that the moon veils in Virgo, both Vulcan and Neptune. But when he talks about hidden planet, we cannot say that Neptune is a hidden planet. We cannot say anymore that Uranus is a hidden planet. Both of them have been discovered. So the form life in general, the etheric physical nature, is ruled very much by Vulcan. The form life is ruled by the moon veiling a hidden planet. These sons of mine live on the earth, and thus within the body of the planetary logos. So he's talking about the moon and Vulcan and the body consciousness. Now remember, the body of the planetary logos is not just the etheric physical body, but it also includes the astral body and the lower mental body of the planetary logos. That is, shall we say, the gaseous, liquid, and solid nature of our planetary logos, even though for us they represent our astral plane and our mental plane. If we really want to have the lower mental body and astral body of our planetary logos, we have to go onto the cosmic plane. So our systemic lower mental and astral natures and our etheric physical natures are the gaseous, liquid, and dense nature of the planetary logos. So these sons of mine, they live on the earth, and thus within the body, the dense body pretty much, of the planetary logos, not even within the etheric body of the planetary logos, which includes at least three and maybe four of the cosmic ethers. So the form life is ruled by the moon, veiling a hidden planet. These sons of mine live on Earth and thus within the body of the planetary logos and are of a definitely intelligent nature. That is what we are. We have Manus in the process of development. The planetary logo have certainly developed it and are developing love fully. And the solar logos, having developed intelligence and love, is developing will fully. Okay, making them, that is us, lords of knowledge. That's what we are at the present time. We are man or manus, lords of knowledge, achieving their goal through the light of the mind and through the method of conflict. Now, the light of the mind suggests, of course, Venus, and suggests Mercury, and our method is conflict, whereby we learn the value of things. We become adjudicators between pairs of opposites. We learn what is high, what is low, and we adjust our values accordingly. For they, that is us, they, we, are also lords of ceaseless and persevering devotion. Now, I suppose you could say that of the solar angels as well. So they once were human beings. They once were lords of ceaseless and persevering devotion. And towards us, their students, they certainly have, over the many millions of years that they supervise us, a form of ceaseless and persevering devotion. But this is the name that is particularly applied to the human being as he is ready to go forth on his monadic journey. Now, when you look at that monadic journey, even though the monadic plane is ruled by Virgo and by Pisces, you really do think of Sagittarius, don't you? Because it is a downward adventure followed by a turn and a return to the monadic plane. So when I think of Sagittarius, I think of that going forth on the great pilgrimage through the five lower planes, and the return, maybe a complete return at the time of the sixth initiation. And then I think of another going forth on a great outward bound mission on the way of higher evolution, the path of higher evolution. And that is also, I would say, ruled by Sagittarius. So it just occurs to me that both the downward journey and its return to the monadic nature and the outward bound journey, and who knows with what kind of return we may be dealing, you know, if you're solar angels, there will be a return, is also ruled by Sagittarius, especially at the sixth great initiation. So here we are, lords of intelligence, lords of ceaseless persevering devotion. We are our method of clarifying our goals and our values, which are Sagittarian in nature, is through the method of conflict, and so much conflict is coming through Sagittarius, through the Mercury, through the Moon, and through the fourth ray, which comes through the constellation itself. Now, I think we are entitled to speak about coming through Sagittarius if it comes through the cross on which Sagittarius is found. Although probably, if say we're a Virgo, we're also on that type of cross, but there will be a slightly different kind of emphasis, even though all of those energies will be available, and thus for Gemini, and thus for Pisces. All the above names, which are related to the planets governing Sagittarius, will be remembered by the students of the Secret Doctrine, which is largely a treatise on the solar angels, really, a treatise on the Agnishvatas, a treatise on those great beings who are the intermediaries between a human being and the god of our planet. If you really think about it, we don't need priests and other human religious figures as intermediaries. We always already have a divine intermediary, and that divine intermediary is our particular solar angel, which is relating us to the divine plan, relating us to the higher planes, relating us to the will, the intention, and the love of our planetary logos, mediating that to us. So, they are the quality names of the divine Manasaputras, the Agnishvatas, who are ourselves. Now, this is one of those peculiar statements, and we just have to take it very carefully. A mind-born son of God is a Manasaputra. We are that. The solar angels are that. Even the planetary logoi are that. They are divine Manasaputras. Usually the term Agnishvata is used only in connection with the solar angels and not with ourselves. But because the human being is a composite and requires the presence and the substanding, sustaining power of the solar angel, we can think of the human being as composed of some of the emanated energy of the Agnishvata. So DK is calling us a mind-born son, okay, a lord of ceaseless persevering devotion. He's calling us a Manasaputra, but he's also calling us an Agnishvata, and we must, however, discriminate between the type of Agnishvata in training, which we are, and the fuller Agnishvata nature of the solar angels who supervise us and who participate in our expression through a portion of their being, having pervaded the entire universe with a fragment of myself, I remain. So, with a certain fragment of itself, it infuses and informs us, and in that respect, we are at least partially an Agnishvata, for our higher mental nature is informed by the Agnishvatic, we might say, nature of the solar angel, who is, of course, a still greater Agnishvata than we are at this time. So, a consideration of the above paragraph will indicate to you the importance of the sign Sagittarius in the life of the incarnating sons of God. Well, without Sagittarius representing, in a way, the animal nature, animal man would not have aspired towards a higher kingdom and have called down the intervention of a still higher group, namely the Agnishvatas, who informed him and invested a portion of their substance in his burgeoning mental nature, until through mental stimulation, either through the presence of the Agnishvata or through the fanning of the mental unit, became a human being. So, as I read these things, I realize that they are just so filled with wisdom, and how much they have to be pondered, carefully pondered. I wonder, you know, it is possible that in the absorption of planets at the end of our solar system, that the principles of our Earth may be absorbed into Venus. This is a complex matter because, in a way, and really, Venus will be absorbed into Neptune and Mercury into Uranus, but it may be that Saturn pretty well absorbs everything first, and then, after that has occurred, the Venusian absorption into Venus, into Neptune, and the Mercurian absorption into Uranus, after that first absorption into Saturn, then the higher absorptions may occur. Anyway, there is reason to believe that these sort of twin planets, Earth and Venus, progress together, and that Venus has much to do with the absorption of the Earth. It's a speculation. We do know that Earth is certainly absorbed into Saturn, but we don't know whether it's absorbed into Saturn after first having been absorbed into Venus. And this is, probably according to the chronology, trillions of years from now. So it's not a big issue for us at the moment, except speculatively it is interesting. Excuse me. Okay. I would point out also that through Jupiter and its influences, Jupiter being the planet that is usually considered related to Sagittarius, Sagittarius is related to three other great constellations. Now, you know, esoteric astrology is very much a science of relationships, and we find the Tibetan always drawing relationships based upon planetary affinities and ray affinities, and even through sign affinities. So we are trying, through the process of inclusive reason, pure reason, to draw together all of these patterns of relationship and to appreciate them. So I would also point out that through Jupiter and its influences, Sagittarius is related to three other great constellations. Pisces, exoterically, indicating the final goal for man. Yes, we are to become saviors. The last sign of the zodiac indicates for us the synthesis. Pisces takes from all the signs, we are told, and the great coming together of all of our created virtues and our accomplishments occurs in Pisces. So that is the final consummation and opens the door into Shambhala for those who go in that direction. Jupiter is the exoteric ruler of Pisces, so naturally Sagittarius is related to Pisces. And I think it's saying there is a connection on page 333 between Sagittarius and Pisces. If I can very quickly do this, I hate to do this in the middle of everything, but I'd like to point out that on page 333, I'd like to point that out, if I possibly can. But I'm not sure that it's going to cooperate with me. Okay. All right, hopefully I'm not experiencing degraded audio. We will see, and all right, let's see how this goes. Yes, now we're in the AAB books, and this is Esoteric Astrology, and we will look here to page 333. Okay, 333. And we will see that Sagittarius, the disciple, becomes the savior in Pisces. So these are these unusual relationships that DK points out. They're not the customary relationships. Page 332 and 333 give us insights into the undeveloped man, the advanced man, and the disciple or initiate, and special connections between signs based on different angles, some of them trine, some of them square, some of them in conjuncts or quincunxes, and so forth. And those, of course, will have to be explained in time. All right, so let's go back now to where we were. All right, so the next connection that Jupiter makes with Sagittarius is to Aquarius. And this is an esoteric connection because Jupiter is the esoteric ruler of Aquarius. This indicating the purpose of all material evolution and the objective of all incarnating processes. And this is the sign of universality. So, and it is a sign of completed relationship and of the flow of energy in a properly distributed manner between all aspects of a particular pattern. So a proper flow of energy within the completed pattern. We are not exactly leaving the planet in Aquarius. We are serving all through the right distribution, intelligent and appropriate distribution of energy. And then there is one more connection here. Jupiter is the hierarchical ruler of Virgo, and so Sagittarius is related to Virgo, indicating the purpose of the cosmic Christ. Now, earlier we are told that Aries represents the cosmic Christ and Virgo represents the individual Christ. Here, the Tibetan talks about a greater Christ nature to which Virgo gives us the access. Probably the birthing of the Christ nature of the solar logos also has something to do with the influence of Virgo, which, of course, being a constellation, the lord of the constellation is certainly greater than the lord of a solar system, such as our solar logos is. So Jupiter here, then, is related to, relates Sagittarius to Pisces, Aquarius, and Virgo. And in relation to Aquarius, material evolution is connected with Aquarius because Aquarius, on the cosmic physical plane, rules the lowest and most material of all the creative hierarchies, the sort of point of life in every unit of matter. So we are, Aquarius is the great redeemer of the triple, become the initiate. Now, Sagittarius is a sign of intelligence, sometimes connected with higher mind, and it is through working through these karmic relationships upon the earth that the individual becomes the one-pointed disciple. He learns to discriminate and not be misled into all the different third-ray tangents and possibilities. He draws all the many lines together. The many lines are drawn into one, and he one-pointedly pursues initiation through the systematic and purposeful, that is Saturn, overcoming of his karma, climbing the mount of karma until it becomes the mountain of initiation. So we could, you know, ponder on the relationship between these four indicators, two of them planetary and two of them constellational. So the field of energy the field of energy consists of the lower three planes, and it is there that we demonstrate our one-pointed discipleship. It is there that we overcome the karma until finally we are able to place our foot upon the mountain of initiation. I think we can even see here a connection between the higher mind, which would be connected to Sagittarius, and the atmic plane, which would be connected through Saturn to Capricorn. So this is the set goal. The goal is to become the initiate. You know, the one-pointed disciple proves himself goes through all of the necessary tasks and fulfilling them properly, becomes the initiate. This is the set goal of the subject born in Sagittarius, whether it is the set goal of initiation into some form of sensuous experience, and both Sagittarius and Capricorn can lead into deeply sensuous experience in the earlier days of human evolution, whether it is the set goal of initiation into some form of sensuous experience or of spiritual undertaking and consciousness, depending on whether we are traveling around the wheel in the ordinary clockwise way or have reversed the wheel or are reversing the wheel in the counterclockwise manner. The result of all experience in any sign of the zodiac should definitely work out as an expansion of consciousness. And no matter what form this experience may take, it consummates in an initiation of some kind or another. It's not necessarily an initiation of the higher kind, but it is an entry into a new area of experience. Sagittarius is always eager for new experience, whether that experience is high or low, and Capricorn is involved in initiating the individual into these low or high experiences. Okay. Students would do well to regard initiation as a determining process in life and should endeavor that every life experience or cycle of life experiences, once we can get our minds around that, should work out as an initiation into a wider field of consciousness. Now that's where Sagittarius comes in its relation to Jupiter, because Jupiter is ever widening the possibility. Saturn is directing towards a new vision, and Jupiter widens that vision. So wider awareness, wider contact, even if it is sensuous contact, is governed by Jupiter, and the steady progression of Sagittarius under the sixth ray, ever moving forward, gives us the possibility of initiation into new experiences. So every life experience or cycle of life experiences should work out as an initiation into a wider field of awareness, of expression, and of resultant contact. So sometimes, you know, neighboring signs are joined together. Scorpio might be joined to Sagittarius in the chart of various individuals. It is so in the chart of Billy Graham, for instance. You know, after a great fight with oneself, one sees a greater vision. Sagittarius might be drawn to, united with Capricorn. So the goal and the steady pursuit of that goal leads at last into the initiation, into the new experience which the goal indicates. It's always interesting to see neighboring signs co-joined. Okay, well, we are here at a point where we can say that this is the end of EAA 74, and that is A, because maybe we will go on with this and make it longer than strictly a one-hour program. So we will start in a few minutes, going a little bit further, and at the moment we can sign off. Okay, everybody, now we can resume. We are in Esoteric Astrology Adventure 74. We've done the first part from pages 187 to 189. And we are in the chapter of Sagittarius. Sagittarius. And we have been discussing the idea, the combination of energies of the Earth and Saturn, and the constellations to which they direct us esoterically, that is Sagittarius and Capricorn. Saturn directs also exoterically to Capricorn. So we're talking about visioning initiation and entering finally into a wider field of experience. So we're speaking here of the consummation, the result of all experience in any sign of the zodiac should definitely work out as an expansion of consciousness, and no matter what form this experience may take, it consummates in an initiation of some kind or another. It can be an initiation into lower forms of life, middle forms of life, or higher forms, but always a new area of experience is entered. Sagittarius is eager for that experience and follows hard upon the path toward that experience, following a vision of that experience until the experience is verified, actually occurs in Capricorn. It is confirmed, let us say. So students would do well to regard initiation as a determining process in life. It's what we are all experiencing and working towards, and should endeavor that every life experience or cycle of life experiences, when we are in a position actually to understand where a cycle of life experiences is leading, should work out as an initiation into a wider field of awareness, of expression, and of resultant contact. So we become aware. We contact that field of awareness, and within that field of awareness, we can express. So we are here then in page 189. There is little more that I need say, and little else upon which I need at this stage of study to comment. Okay. The man who is nearing the path of discipleship, or who is already a disciple, pledged or under observation, and I suppose before we make our pledge, we are oftentimes a chela in the light, and then we make that pledge, perhaps as a chela in the light, and move towards accepted discipleship. The man who is nearing the path of discipleship, or who is already a disciple, pledged or under observation, as there are reports being given to the master by a disciple who is closer to us and yet more advanced than we are, informing the master of our progress. The man who is nearing the path of discipleship or is already a disciple will profit much from a deep and systematic study of this sign. This is the path of the sign of one-pointed discipleship. There are a number of signs very much associated with discipleship. Virgo is one, Scorpio is another, Sagittarius is another. In one way, we become the one-pointed disciple at various phases of our development under Sagittarius before we become the triumphant disciple. In some ways, it's as if Sagittarius leads to Scorpio. In other ways, as if Scorpio leads to Sagittarius. There is a liberating effect of the triumph which allows us to speed upon our way towards the next objective. At the same time, when we are one-pointedly moving forward, we enter a period of testing whereby we can be confirmed as the true disciple and liberated for another phase of discipleship. So we seek and we seek until we are tested. We pass our test and we are liberated into a new form of seeking. The order of signs, you know, do they always go in the clockwise direction, sometimes in the counterclockwise direction? Let us just say that if you were born with the sun in Sagittarius and Scorpio rising, you would be the one-pointed disciple seeking those tests which would confirm your liberation, and then you could seek again. If you had the sun in Scorpio and Sagittarius rising, you would be passing through many tests which could then liberate you for a more energetic one-pointed seeking of the next objective. So I think we can understand how this goes, and always check your rising sign and your sun sign to see which is the preeminent sign, the sign in which you are currently expressing on your way to a higher form of expression indicated by the rising sign. All right. So he's telling us we can profit from a systematic study of this sign. A systematic study. I would suggest that the student bear in mind the position of this sign. Scorpio stands midway between two signs of balance or equilibrium, Sagittarius and Libra. Well, we certainly understand Libra to be a sign of equilibrium, but Sagittarius, well, that's another matter. However, in the Tarot deck, although Libra stands for justice and therefore equilibrium, Sagittarius stands for temperance, which is another form of equilibrium. It's bringing all of the different energies of the system into a kind of correct balance so that they are restrained and contained from overmuch expression. They are tempered, as it were. And when we lose our temper, we display what is called temperament. And this is the releasing of certain energies beyond their due bounds. So, Sagittarius, Scorpio stands midway between two signs of balance or equilibrium, Sagittarius and Libra. Libra marks an interlude or a notable point of balance before the strength testing and trial of Scorpio. A notable, I suppose, the individual who is a disciple and who is in that Libran phase is well aware that this is a temporary stage of the balancing of forces and preparing for their use in the trials and tests of Scorpio. Sagittarius marks another point of balance which follows after that testing. For the archer has to acquire and hold a steady eye, hand, and stance prior to firing the arrow, which, when rightly directed and correctly followed, will carry him through the portal of initiation. So, this is not a hasty running forward, although perhaps in the early days of Sagittarius, much like the early days of Aries, we do find that hasty running forward. But it is a forethought, a keen appraisal of the objective, and holding in a balance. You know, you don't see many archers shooting their arrow on one foot and in an unstable situation. They have to have a firm stance. Their hand has to be steady, and their eye has to be focused upon the goal. And all of this follows a just appraisal of what is to be fired, where it is to be fired, what is the trajectory of the firing, and so forth. So this requires a very stable situation before the release of the arrow. And when the arrows are released by an unstable archer, they will not have the desired effect. They will miss the mark. So there is this tremendous appraisal, forethought, forward thinking towards the goal before the arrow is of thought and aspiration is released. So I think we see points of recollectedness, points of balance achieved in both of these signs. Both of these signs. Okay. I'll repeat it. Libra marks an interlude or a notable point of balance, sort of making sure that the frictions within the energy system are removed, or, if they are not, when the strenuous testing and trial of Scorpio occurs, those inner frictions may lead to defeat. A certain degree of harmony is required between the vehicles which are to be used together in an integrated manner before there can be success in the battle. Because the conflict must be removed from within the individual, which it can be in Libra, to the facing of an outer enemy, or perhaps an intrusive inner enemy. At least the energy system has to be integrated and well coordinated, functioning smoothly. This is possible in Libra, where so many arts of right kind of expression are achieved. In other words, where ease of expression is achieved. And we often see people within the martial arts, let us say, having a wonderful gracefulness in the handling of their equipment, even if this equipment is brought into battle. With respect to Sagittarius, the conflicts of Scorpio and the battles of Scorpio have been overcome, and a new point of stability is achieved, which allows one to take one's eye off the battlefield and look towards a much farther objective. The energies have been released from the battlefield and can go into the forethought and envisioning of a new goal. So the energies are now, the energies which had been in a way dispersed in battle can now be focused on the distant objective, even if that objective is in a way an interior objective. Excuse me. So, Sagittarius marks another point of balance which follows after that testing. As I say, in the Scorpio to Sagittarian life, let's say the sun sign is Scorpio and Sagittarius rising, we may find the earlier part of life filled with the Scorpionic struggles and later a kind of directed steadiness and vision, following of a vision in a successful manner once one is liberated from the expenditure of energy on the battlefield. It would be interesting to study the different phases of life in relation to the moon sign, the sun sign, and the rising sign, and see if this actually bears out, and if the early phases of life represent the moon sign, the middle phases, the sun sign, and later the appropriation in a positive manner, in a more spiritual manner, of the rising sign. Let's just say that if we're in the later phases of our life and we're still demonstrating primarily the moon or sun sign, we have not gone through encounter with these energies in the proper manner, and we still have somewhat to do to use the rising sign. So Sagittarius marks another point of balance which follows after that testing, for the archer has to acquire and hold a steady eye, hand, and stance. And if you are a Sagittarian or in a Sagittarian period, you can even take these kind of physical representation and think about your life. And of course, these are symbols, but think about your life and whether you have the steady inner eye, whether you have a grip on your instrument so that you can release energy in a directed manner, and whether in fact you are stable enough in your life not to be thrown off balance by outer things, but can maintain your stance and thereby direct your arrow towards the envisioned objective. We can use these very physical description to understand the extent to which we have achieved the proper disciplic orientation, a more inner orientation, of course. And this is prior to firing the arrow, which, when rightly directed and correctly followed, because we must follow after the arrow we fire, if we have an intuition that comes to us, or if we can follow our aspiration towards the revelation of intuition, we have to work with the descending intuition. We have to work with that which we find that the arrow has reached. And this will carry him through the portal of initiation. Part of us, in a way, goes ahead. And part of us is already in the land beyond initiation. And we have to sometimes drag the rest of our nature along and whip it into shape, bring it into a proper fitness, so that it too, and not just our mind, not just our consciousness, can pass into the land of the next initiation. This is so often the issue between Capricorn and Sagittarius. Sagittarius can envision many things and can get the conscious feeling of what they are like, but can the rest of the instrument, in a way ruled by the earth, follow the high ideals and ideas that are generated by the Sagittarian? And that's where Capricorn comes in, because Capricorn can apply the necessary Saturnian discipline to the rest of the mechanism, so that it too becomes fit to stand in the presence of the initiatory energies. In studying Sagittarius, it becomes obvious that one of the major underlying themes is that of direction. Now, I may have talked about this before, but if we go into the rays and the initiations, approximately page 340, we will see that in the third initiation, the theme of direction is also prominent. Okay? Yes. And so this tells us something about the manner in which Sagittarius helps to prepare for the third initiation. I am reminded of one of the disciples of the Tibetan. This was the only disciple where D.K. mentioned to him directly that the man reminded him of himself when he was preparing for the third initiation. So usually Sagittarius is connected with the first and second initiations, but Sagittarius certainly envisions the third degree, and through direction is part of the process which leads to the taking of the third degree. As a matter of fact, when you think that sometimes more than one initiation can be taken in the same life, if you have a kind of a Sagittarius Capricorn setup, it's perfect in a way for taking both the second and third degree, about which DK tells us in Initiation Human and Solar, pages 84 and 85. So here we have integration, direction, and science. Science bringing in the necessity for the fifth ray, which rules the third initiation and involves the Ajna Center, and the third degree being the initiation of the integrated personality, and the steady directedness towards illumination, this being provided by Sagittarius. So that's just a cross-link, which I thought would be of importance, linking Sagittarius to the envisioning of the third degree and to the experience in higher consciousness of some of what the third degree may actually mean. So it becomes obvious that one of the major underlying themes is that of direction. The archer is guiding his horse towards some one specific objective. Now, as a person advances along the path of discipleship, the distractions become fewer, or at least the way of handling distractions becomes more skillful. You know how in the beginning we can be torn in every type of direction, and even the Sagittarian, not just the Gemini, can go off on many errant adventures which really lead nowhere. So one-pointedness is achieved the hard way by the Sagittarian after many bitter experiences of following non-productive paths. The archer is guiding his horse towards some one specific objective. Okay. He is sending his arrow towards a desired point. He is aiming at some specific goal. Now, there is the desired point, of course, and there is also the intended point, the willfully intended point. He seeks to penetrate with that arrow that particular objective, or at least anchor himself within that objective, or in the realm of that objective, or in the field of that objective. He's seeking to enter a new field of experience. This is uniquely Sagittarian, this penetration into that which is expansive and new, or expansive because it is new. He is aiming at some specific goal. He is hard to deflect. I'm remembering how D.K. talks about Washington, D.C. as the capital of the United States being ruled by Sagittarius, and talking about a certain undeflectability or rigidity or firm holding of policy objectives, difficult to deter and to change. Okay, the sense of direction or guidance, I suppose intuitive guidance, because Sagittarius is one of the intuitive signs, as D.K. tells us, the sense of direction or guidance is characteristic of the enlightened man. The one, in this case, who is pursuing illumination and for whom the light guides, because the light of the soul is thrown upon the path of the Sagittarian individual as he treads that path. How does he know what is the next step ahead? Well, the light within him, the soul light, shows what is the next step ahead. He does not have to gather it from others, although the teacher may indicate as well what is the next step ahead. This sense of direction or guidance, sometimes, you know, rather childishly applied in the early days, where as if everything is guiding you, every step you take is being guided, and you're being directed always by some higher power and not relying upon your own reason. That's an earlier stage, but later it becomes the real intuitive thing. This sense of direction or guidance is characteristic of the enlightened man, of the aspirant and disciple. I guess he's speaking here of the aspirant and disciple as somewhat enlightened. And this is a growing recognition that there will be a light upon the path. There will be light upon the path, and that intuitively we will somehow know from our own inner illumined guidance what that light, what that light is indicating. When this faculty of sensitive direction, sensitive to intuition, is rightly developed, it becomes in the earlier stages an effort to identify all soul and personality activity with God's plan. Because, you know, we need to have a vision of the plan. A vision, let's see, of the plan. D.K. tells this is important for all disciples, and in Sagittarius, the gathering, the formulation of a vision of the plan is something that can be fairly easily achieved, given the qualities of that sign. So we are sensitive to direction, and this direction is becoming, when we are in the probationary stages of probationary initiation, an effort to identify all soul and personality activity with God's plan, meaning we do not want to stray from citing the vision and following the vision of God's plan. And this is, in the last analysis, the ordered direction of God's thought. I think that's a wonderful definition of the plan. Let's put that down here as a definition. Definition of the plan, the ordered direction of God's thought. And when we use the word ordered, we think about the sequential expression of God's thought, as it is intended to emerge in an ordered manner. The purpose is, it already exists, It is, in a way, the same in the beginning as it is in the end. It is an archetype which is, in a way, independent of time. But the plan, in a way, from the atmic plane and ruled by Saturn, is not independent of time. So there is an orderly unfoldment of the purpose through the plan, which is intended by God, or God, our planetary logos. And to this, the Sagittarian can become sensitive. So here we have the attempt to identify all soul and personal activity with God's plan. We can ask ourselves, are we one-pointed disciples, and are we in that stage where we are attempting to identify all aspects of our consciousness and all activities of our personality with what we sense of God's plan as the ordered direction of His thought? That's a very exacting discipline, really. There's so many ways in which we can go astray and do many things which are not particularly involved with the expression of the plan. Maybe in a general way, of course, we are all committed to the plan, but from moment to moment, are we so aware of what that plan is that we are really on the beam with respect to its expression? Okay, so the ordered expression of God's thought, I'd almost like to enlarge that a little bit if I can. Let's see if I can make this a bit bigger. The ordered expression of God's plan, it's so powerful. Ordered expression of God's thought. Okay, there is no true direction apart from thought. And I would have you remember that thought is power. These are powerful statements. If we do not think reasonably and think ahead and also think in an intuitive manner, we will not have what DK is calling direction. We may be impulsed in a certain direction, but it's not a true direction. It's the direction in which our impulses lead us, and usually those are directions which will fulfill some aspect of the lower nature. But true direction, relates to God's plan. True direction, apart from thought. And I would have you remember that thought is power. Now, this is very much an idea that Master Moria also expresses. And that's why we, as disciples and disciples in training, have to be so careful about how we wield our thought, because it is an impressive agency and can be constructive or destructive. Thought is power. The God of our planet arranges all things according to His thought, i.e. according to His plan, and we on a much lower scale are creating our lives according to the nature, clarity, alignment, etc. of our thought. This is a statement upon which all disciples should ponder, i.e. that thought is power. Let me make that big again, you know? Okay. Thought is power. This is a statement upon which all disciples should ponder, for they can achieve no real comprehension of the direction of God's plan unless they work with a phase in their own lives which is subject to their own mental direction. So some tiny aspect of the plan, some phase of the plan. You know, for instance, many of us are involved now in this so-called second ray spiritual propaganda effort, spiritual education to be spread as much around the world as possible. That is a phase of God's plan. God's immediate plan for our planet has much to do with the externalization of the hierarchy and the reappearance of the Christ, but that cannot be effectively achieved, or harmoniously achieved, let us say, unless many more human beings are educated in that particular intention of our planetary logos, namely the hierarchy, a certain portion of it externalize, and that the great Lord, the head of the hierarchy, the Christ, the Lord Maitreya, actually appear visibly among us and work among us. So we have to prepare the consciousness of humanity to achieve this. We have to work with a phase in our own life of this plan. And so we have to ask ourselves, what are we doing? Now, many of us are involved in the field of education. Some of us are using various means to promote that education, whether it might be science or art or economics or, you know, religion or healing, whatever it may be. We are attempting to open the consciousness of our fellow human beings to a wider possibility. And that's a phase of the divine plan. So let us try to make sure that we can actually identify the phase of the plan with which we are working, so that we can begin to fathom the larger intention of the plan. I suppose the immediate objective within the next number of decades is that with which we have to be concerned. Especially as we move towards 2025, we are definitely in a phase of the plan. We're in a phase of the plan called the era of the forerunner, where in a way we are presenting the vision for some 60 years, from 1965 to 2025, we are presenting the vision of planetary possibilities, of hierarchical possibilities, of a higher and wider life for humanity. We are using Sagittarius in a way to inspire other human beings with the same kind of vision that has inspired us. Then and only then can they understand. And when we are working out that phase of the plan, that working out must be subject to our own mental direction. In other words, we have to think carefully how we are to work with this particular phase of the plan in which we find ourselves involved. So we work out a plan, a lesser plan, a program, a means of delivery. We have our own particular objectives, and we guide it all by careful thought, which, if possible, is fertilized by soul vision and by the intuition. So then and only then can they understand. Which takes us back to Pisces, the sign of understanding, a very strong connection between two Jupiterian signs, Sagittarius and Pisces. Upon the ordinary wheel, the man who is born in this sign or with this sign in the ascendant will be influenced by what the Hindu scriptures call Kama Manas, which is inadequately translated by the words desire and mind. There's kind of an inseparable working together of desire and mind in Kama Manas. It's sometimes not possible to separate them. The purpose of the fifth ray in human nature and working within human nature is to help the man separate his thinking process from his desires. Now, he will always have desires, but at least while he is thinking, he does not allow the desire nature to interfere with the thought process. However, of course, desire or aspiration does have a kind of connection with intuition. So in a way, there is a phase in which desire, thought, and intuition can form a triangle with good results. Actually, what we want is buddhi manas, intuition and mind, rather than kama manas. We want our kama manas to evolve or become transformed into what we would call buddhi manus, or the thought process, as fertilized by the illuminating intuition. So anyway, Kama manus is involved here. And he says it's not really an adequate translation when we call it desire mind. But so many human beings are in the, strictly speaking, the Kama monastic phase, where they have what is called, I think by Carl Jung, feeling-toned thoughts. In other words, all of the thoughts have a tone of the desire body. They are carrying some influence of the astral body, and so they are not pure thought in that respect. This dual force controls and influences the life. In the early stages of unfoldment, its focus is upon desire and the satisfaction of that desire, I suppose, using the mind, which is associated to help bring about the satisfaction of desire. And in the later stages of purely personality development, the focus is upon the control of desire by the mind. So in the beginning, we might say we use what mind we have to see to the satisfaction of our desires, to make sure that mind helps us satisfy our desires. And later, in the later stages of personality development, we understand that our desires can get the best of us. We like to choose them and make them, in the words of Agni Yoga, goal fit. And so therefore we start to control our desires by the mind. Now we remember in discussing Mercury and the mind in relation to Scorpio that was one of the chief ways in which the mind was utilized in Scorpio, the control of the desire body. The other was for illumination. The major objective is, at this time, the intelligent use of all powers to bring about adequate satisfaction of desire, which is, in this case, very frequently simply ambition to achieve some goal or attain some objective. Well, this is the way it is, I think, for the majority of human beings. This is not yet the reversed wheel. We're not talking about Kama Manus, or the relationship between Manus and Kama, in the Sagittarian subject who is on the reversed wheel. So usually intelligence is used so that all powers can bring about the satisfaction of desire, the fulfillment of ambition, to attain some objective. The Sagittarian is very keen on fulfilling the objective which he or she envisions, and the mind can assist in this manner. So let us look for the quality of ambition in the Sagittarian upon the ordinary wheel, just as we find an even more intense and perhaps willful type of ambition in the Capricorn, who is not yet upon the reversed wheel. This process of personality satisfaction, yes, he tells us, takes place upon the ordinary wheel. Now, how is it for us otherwise when the wheel reverses? Upon the reversed wheel, the goal is the expression of love wisdom. Now, that's a very strong Jupiterian second ray expression, and this is ever selflessly developed and always consecrated to the good of the whole, which the Sagittarian now sees, having under Jupiter widened his vision, and not just the satisfaction of the individual. So a wider picture is seen, and love, wisdom, love, wisdom supports this wider picture, or supports, let's say, service to what the wider picture reveals, and that is the manner in which Sagittarius is related to what Dane Rudyard has called the planetarization of consciousness. So when we have a vision of the globe and of our planetary chain and scheme and so forth, we seek to contribute to the development of that whole. And one of the ways of contributing to that is to bring out the soul nature of love of our planetary logos. And that is akin to the Jupiterian second ray found in relation to Sagittarius. So we see how the different methods are used. I would say that a much higher vision appears for the Sagittarian individual once he is the true disciple. And the link between kama and intuition is forged. So with sufficient aspiration, intuition comes into focus, and intuition can then begin to guide the mind instead of desire guiding the mind. Okay, let's see. What are next? Yes. Okay. We are told that Sagittarius governs the thighs, which are the main center of physical power and protective strength, you know, either for approach or flight. The thighs, so related in a way to horsepower, what is what moves us rapidly on foot. Think of the relationship between Pisces, the feet, and the thighs, Sagittarius. We can, when those two signs are strong, we can go rapidly on foot. We can race forward. It would be interesting to see the combination of those two signs in those who are involved in track and field events. We are told that Sagittarius governs the thighs, which are the main center of physical power and protective strength, and also the sacral center, which provides the energy for the use of the creative powers of the physical life. So Sagittarius is associated with the sacral center. Also Scorpio is, also Libra is. All of those three signs together in the third quadrant are associated with the sacral center. Here we have the third ray coming in, ruled by the Earth. Usually Uranus is connected with the sacral center, Uranus. And we can also connect the Moon for generation, and we can connect Mars as well with the sacral center. But this is interesting that Sagittarius is so closely connected with this procreative center. Okay. This is also symbolically true. In Sagittarius, the disciple has two things to discover within himself. These are the power to make progress upon the path. That's symbolically connected with the thighs, because they give us the power to move our feet forward. And to walk the way. That's the Pisces imagery. Well, both Pisces and Sagittarius, as well as Libra, have a particular connection with the path. Libra with the straight and narrow path, Sagittarius with the propulsion along the path through the use of the thighs symbolically, and Pisces the feet which tread the path. In Sagittarius, the disciple has two things to discover within himself. These are the power to make progress upon the path, because it is a sign which wants to, in a way, race ahead. It does not want to be held back. It wants to make rapid progress upon the path and to walk the way, and also the ability to create in the higher and spiritual sense. So making progress upon the path and creating in the higher and spiritual sense, these are two factors or things to be discovered within the disciple. Okay, two factors to be discovered within the disciple in Sagittarius. Okay. So, this concerns the relationship between the sacral and the throat centers. Now, of course, both of them are creative centers, but we're dealing with two types of creativity here, are we not? Lower and higher creativity. Lower and higher creativity. So I suppose that in Sagittarius we oftentimes conceive or envision that which we wish to create. This may be true in the case of creating a child. It may be true in the case of creating something higher in the more spiritual sense. Because creativity and envisioning work together. Here we have maybe the sacral throat and ajna center involved. Even actually the solar plexus can be involved in visioning or desiring that which is to be created. Maybe if we look at the two forms of creativity, we find sacral and solar plexus involved in the lower, and the throat center and the ajna center involved in the higher sense. These powers... Okay, the relationship between the sacral and throat. And as we know, at the time of the first initiation, with which Sagittarius has something to do, we're told initiates of the first two degrees, or probationary initiates in relation to Sagittarius, at that time of the first initiation, there is an elevation of the sacral energies towards the throat, and the individual, instead of being what we can call pro-creative, becomes creative in the higher sense. We're moving from... What are we moving from? The... how many petals here in the sacral center? Yes, I think 6 petals. We're moving from the 6 to the 16. Interesting how the number 22 does enter into the creative process. When we consider the 6 of the sacral and the 16 of the throat, we get 22. When we consider the 10 of the solar plexus and the 12 of the heart, these are energy transfer routes, we also get 22. all right. So, the disciple has two things to discover, and these are the power to make progress upon the path, you know, to really advance and not to be held back by deflections, obstacles, by achieving a certain positivity over any obstacle that might present itself. The Sagittarian individual is able to progress powerfully upon the path through what we call thigh power. You know, there's much racing that's done in Sagittarius, and much willful insistence on forging ahead, and also the ability to create in the higher and spiritual sense, and these can be high thought forms and patterns which are created, theories, you might say, because Sagittarius has much to do with the higher mind, especially when the third ray is prominent. So this concerns the relationship between the sacral and the throat centers. These powers, which I think oftentimes have much to do with vision, and so does Sagittarius have much to do with vision. You know, with the higher powers, much depends on what we see. These powers, the higher powers, are as yet embryonic in the earlier Sagittarian experience of the disciple. Even of the disciple, we're not just talking about the Sagittarian experience of the undeveloped man, but of the disciple himself. But they become more developed and potent as he cyclically returns to life experience in this sign. And, you know, it takes a long time. I think what DK is describing is that there is a return to a sign many times, either with that sign as the sun sign, uninfluenced by that which will, through exaltation, take him off the path, or through temptation, take him off the path. Neither the valley nor the heights produce any demonstrable effect, and that's interesting because we do remember that in Aquarius, what have I done here? I hope I can go backwards here, yes. That in Aquarius, the hill and valley experience actually were very prominent. So let's see here. Let's just say, unlike that other Jupiterian sign, Aquarius. You know, we talk about the heights of exaltation and the depths of depression in relation to Aquarius, you know, a sign which we can associate with bipolar disorder, or what's called the manic depressive state. So let us look again, I suppose, for the steadiness of the Sagittarian and see if we can find this in Sagittarian disciples who are, in a way, avoiding the great heights and the depths. Mercury, which is the expression of the fourth ray and also the god of the mental processes, and that's many mental processes, maybe five of them, as we've been discussing, is his power definitely lessened in this sign, and this for two reasons, esoterically speaking. Okay, I think what we will do, however, is we will bring this portion to an end. So this is Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 74B, and this is page 189 to 192. And we will let this be a 2-hour segment, and we have just time then to close with the great invocation, which we will do. Okay. All right. And then we will move on into Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 75. So let us together sound the great invocation. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay, and so we are at page 192, and we're talking about the Mercury as the god of the mental processes, and the reason why there is no great fall, but there is a detriment, and his power is lessened. So we will take this up either as the beginning of number 75, or as perhaps a continuation of this number 74.